Welcome, welcome, welcome to Crossbody of Work. My name is Evan.
My name is Javier.
And we have more bonus content. It's another bonus episode. It's a lot of fun. Woo! We are entertaining ourselves during this period of social distancing. And it is our first recording after WrestleMania 36. Javier, what did you think? WrestleMania 36.
I thought it was awesome. I obviously, pro wrestling without a crowd is not a thing that I enjoy. Obviously, if this WrestleMania proves anything, it's that fans and fan reaction is undoubtedly the most important part of wrestling. Like, it just is. But, you know, I thought there was some good stuff in there. I mean, obviously, you know, people are going to say what they want to say about the two hot topics coming out of that, which is the Boneyard match and the Firefly Funhouse match. I thought they were excellent. I thought they were very entertaining pieces of business. And I really enjoyed a lot of stuff about this. I thought Charlotte Rhea Ripley was the match of the whole thing. I thought they had a terrific match to open night two. And honestly, the only real duds that I would say are probably the Lashley Aleister Black match, because what was that finish?
It had nothing to it too.
Yeah, and I think
the finish was one of the only things I liked, was that Lana being bossy is what ruined it for Lashley. I think that was like one of the only things I liked about it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a Lana guy. I don't understand the appeal of Lana. I guess she's a very attractive woman, but like I hate everything about her and her character. And I just can't do that. But
very inconsistent character, I feel.
Yeah, and another dud was the debut of Bianca Belair. I don't know if this is a full call up or not, but I don't
it
like
is a
her
call
in
up.
That position. I do so not like
she,
her there.
She made an appearance on Monday Night Raw. She called out Zelina Vega. They did a singles match that ended in DQ. And then she did a six-person tag, where it's Theory, Garza, and Vega versus Street Profits and Bianca. I like it only because I think that they're not going to do a full-on, like, Belair's just with the Street Profits. I think she's going to become a major player in the Raw Women's Division, and that's going to be real good. Because Bianca real good.
Yeah, Bianca real good. But I want Bianca on SmackDown Live. I don't know. I feel like she would be more suited for that because she is still a babyface. And I feel like, we've got a division over there in SmackDown that is devoid of babyfaces, and a division on Raw that's devoid of heels.
Yeah, so why I think it'll be a matter of moving people over, because WWE, for all of their faults, they do a really good job of keeping couples together on the road, which I think is admirable.
Yeah.
So, you know, if they really want to call up Bianca, she's going to have to go where Montez is. And so,
yeah.
I think for me, the Boneyard match and the Firefly Funhouse were two highlights. I thought they were wonderful. I thought, of all people, Kevin Nash had a really great take on it all. On Twitter, he said the company's called World Wrestling Entertainment. Both nights, I was entertained. And I was like, yeah, me too. Kevin Nash articulating my thoughts. I never would have thought.
Yeah, this wasn't this wasn't your typical WrestleMania show. You know, this was never going to be at the heights of one of the greatest WrestleManias of all time. You just can't do it without the crowd. It's just they're completely out of their element. But you know, they gave us a quality product, and I was entertained. Like you said, I was very entertained. I thought the Firefly Funhouse was, to me, the best thing of the weekend. I was so entertained by that thing. Again, I am a John Cena mark. You know, I he was my first real favorite wrestler, so like obviously, you know, he's gonna be the guy that I really get behind and all this stuff. I wanted Bray Wyatt to win the match, but I'm just really happy that they went down the route they did. I was very entertained by every single bit of that match, and I'm not gonna say the John Moxley line, because we are a PG podcast for the most part. But man, so Evan, good. I know you're dying to do it.
It hurts. It hurts because I want. It's such good shit. It's so good. Couple other highlights and one more dud. Kevin Owens and his jump off the WrestleMania sign. Fantastic.
That whole match,
wonderful spot.
I thought it was
really
great.
Good match. With the false finish or the early finish of the DQ, I was really disappointed, but they really saved it with the no DQ aspect afterwards.
Yeah.
Big ups to Kofi Kingston, Jimmy Uso, and John Morrison for an excellent ladder match. You always think of a ladder match as being something to really pop the fans and get the fans excited. The fact that they were able and willing to do all the spots they did without a crowd in the arena just shows how much those three really wanted to make a WrestleMania moment. And I think that match was one of the only matches that could have existed on a normal WrestleMania card and not be out of place. Like, that was a WrestleMania quality match to me. Dud, Rob Gronkowski. Dude. Like, I find Gronk funny. I find him funny in very small doses. I find him funny in very small doses. It reminds me of, like, a friend you had in high school who, like, you grew up together and then you hung out with new people when we got older and you were like, yeah, he's, you know what, he's kind of annoying. And, like, you see him at a party and you're like, hey, man, how's it going? And you can hang out with him for, like, a couple minutes. But then you see him later and he's got a lampshade on his head and you're like, dude, that guy's an idiot. It's Gronk. He's fine. I don't understand the fact that he is currently a champion in WWE. I know the 24/7 championship means it's nothing, but title. Like, come on.
It is a joke. Mojo Rawley held it. It's a joke.
Now that is off my chest, we're not talking about WrestleMania. Well, we did, but we're not talking about it on this podcast. No, no, no. For this bonus episode, we asked all of you, the listeners, the fans, what you wanted to hear us do. And you liked the 92 Rumble recap so much, you wanted to see us do another Royal Rumble. So we're back at it with another Royal Rumble review. This time it is 2001.
Oh, yeah.
Another quality Rumble.
This is a great Rumble. Again, Royal Rumble Mark over here. So, you know, I'm a big fan of pretty much almost any single one of them outside of whatever 2011 was. But yeah, no, this was definitely a good one.
Is 2011 the Del Rio one?
Yes.
Yeah.
The 40 man. This was a great one. You know, this is in my opinion top 3. I put it there, 92, this one 2005. This one and 2005 are kind of in the same boat to me. I think they're neck and neck. I give the nod to 2005 more just cuz that's my first Royal Rumble, really.
Fair.
So, you know, that's obviously going to be the one that I enjoy the most. But this is a very good one. The hardcore Rumble, you know, yes. you've got a lot of the ECW guys that transitioned over to the WWF at the time. You've got some great storylines going on here. And Stone Cold Steve Austin has become obsessed with winning the WWF championship. So what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, what could possibly happen? This is the last Rumble of the Attitude Era. It is a star-studded event. Though, we'll get into it when we go through, because we're going to break it down entrant by entrant, pretty much, and elimination by elimination. Yep. This is a very back-weighted Rumble in terms of star power. A lot of the early matches carried by only a couple guys, specifically one guy, and we'll get to him. But the end of the match is where a lot of the star power is. But overall, a really good match. A lot of storytelling, a lot of elements that I really enjoyed. But one of the best Rumbles of all time, I'd say.
Yeah,
and one of the most rewatchable Rumbles. This is a very rewatchable Rumble.
Yeah, I'd say this is the most rewatchable Royal Rumble match. I would say this. I would say 2008, 2007 is a very rewatchable one. But this one just has everything you could want. You know, it's got the hardcore stuff. It's got Kane being a monster. It's got the stuff with Stone Cold. A great promo by The Rock right before the Rumble that really just gets you hyped up and makes you want to run right through a wall.
The promo from The Rock, it really does set the stage. So this ends up being the year where it's the final. It's the second Rock Austin match, not the final one.
Yes.
His promo, when you listen to it, it really does set the stage for the next Rock Austin match. Rock can sell anything, right? This man is Hollywood. This man is charisma in a gigantic frame. But he really sells the idea of him and Austin again. And the crowd, even like, they don't even see each other, touch each other yet. It's before the match, and the crowd is already ecstatic over the idea of Rock Austin.
Yeah. They're the two biggest stars in the company. You know, that's just what it is. You know, you can
say
that's
what they
do. They're two of the biggest stars of all time. I mean, at this point, Rock's been the biggest babyface the company's had for the better part of a year, just because Austin had been out with that neck injury, and he didn't really come back until towards the end of 2000. So,
speaking of that Austin injury, Rikishi gets a special treat. He gets to be number 30 in this Rumble, because this was during his heel run after he ran over Stone Cold Steve Austin, because he did it for the people. He did it for The Rock.
And then he turned on The Rock.
It was such a bad, bad storyline.
Garbage. However, it did lead to one of the better matches, I would say, ever in the Three Stages of Hell match between Stone Cold and Triple H that comes at the next pay-per-view after this one.
If you tell me that there's like a really nice piece of china in a bowl of crap, or a big thing of crap, and I gotta dig through the crap to get to it, I don't know how willing I am for that.
I feel like you gotta think about who the people involved here are. We've got Triple H, we've got Stone Cold Steve Austin, we've got Rikishi, we've got The Rock. Top guys.
One of these things is not like the other. One of these things is Rikishi.
One of these things is The Rock, because Rikishi is the greatest pro wrestler of all time, David. Have you seen the stink face? That's a whole lot of meat there, brother.
Oh, it's such good shit. Let's now go into the Rumble. So normally when we do Crossbody Work podcasts, we pick one wrestler, we watch five of their matches, one of their promos, we break down their whole career, usually from beginning to end, talking about some of their highlights, some of their impacts on the business, things like that. When it comes to Rumble reviews, we're doing beat by beat, entrant by entrant, and elimination by elimination, and just talking about things we like, things we didn't like, and other random asides as they come up. So should we get cracking into it?
Let's go. Let's do this.
Number one entrant is a great choice for a number one entrant, and that is Jeff Hardy. And number two is Bull Buchanan of Right
B
to Censor.
B squared. Yes. Put some respect on his name. B squared. So for those who don't know, when John Cena first started the rapper gimmick, he was joined along by a certain Bull Buchanan by the name of B squared, and they were amazing together. B squared is the best. He was terrible at rapping, but he didn't have to be. He was awesome.
Bull Buchanan is a great heavy. He really is. He works as a great heater. I forget which storyline it was, but I know there was one where somebody brought back Bull Buchanan to confront John Cena in like the mid-2010s. And it was during my lull period, and I remember just seeing a clip of it somewhere, and I thought I was having a fever dream. But Bull Buchanan, you're right. People need to put some respect on his name. But also, Right to Censor, ahead of its time. 100% ahead of its time. Right now, it's being done again. Joey Ryan and RVD doing a similar gimmick now in Impact called Cancel Culture, I believe.
Oh, I did not know this.
Yeah, Joey Ryan is going by Joseph Ryan, and he's no longer doing penis flips. So
wait, so RVD's no longer with his wife and her...
She's part of it. I believe Katie Forbes is part of it, is part of the cancel culture. But that, like, this is what I mean about it being so ahead of a time. Right to Censor, which was riff, obviously, on, I believe it was the PTC or something like that. It was some group that had issues with WWF programming at the time. And so Right to Censor came in to shut everything down. And they were just heat magnets. People hated Right to Censor.
Yeah, we're at that stage where people are still degenerates. More so than they are now, probably. But, you know, they're definitely pushing the envelope here and what they do and don't want. And clearly what they didn't want was to be censored by wrestlers for some reason. But yeah, no, we got a lot of good stuff there. And we had a good little interaction here between Bull Buchanan and Jeff Hardy. Jeff Hardy at that stage where really he hasn't been slowed down by injuries. You know, he's still insanely athletic here. You could just see it in the way that he's moving around and stuff. And, man, this young Jeff Hardy from the 2000 to 2002, that guy was just so freaking good, man. Like, he was so good.
Number three is Matt Hardy, brother of Jeff.
Yes.
Deleter of worlds, but pre-deletion. And of course, just like Jeff Hardy, he's in a mesh shirt because the only people in WWF who can make mesh clothing work are these two.
Yeah.
WWE/WWF loves having both Hardys in the Rumble at once. They do it all the time.
They really do. It happens
in the 02 Rumble, I believe, too, where they're both out there attacking Undertaker.
Yeah.
Or is that might be, I think that's the 02 Rumble.
I think that's 02, because it wouldn't have been 03.
No, it's whatever Rumble Maven is in. I think it's 02.
2002.
Yeah, where he eliminates the Undertaker. Great moment. Yeah. But again, in this one, Matt joins the fray. The two of them take out Bull Buchanan. They eliminate him with a double clothesline. But my question before we move on, considering their entire career, who is your preferred Hardy?
I'd still Jeff. Jeff is just giving me so much. I mean, his feud with Randy Orton, where he jumped off the big, whatever that little big wall of pipes is. I don't even remember what that was. But that, his feud with CM Punk in 2009, which was amazing, and unfortunately led to his release from the company. His stint in TNA, where he debuts and just climbs a cage for some reason and just sits there. It was weird. Jeff Hardy's given me so many memories, and he will always be a guy that I love a lot. Matt Hardy's obviously had this late stage career revival with the whole Broken Universe stuff, with the Woken Universe stuff, and now again with Damascus and AEW, and he's on his way to do a lot of great stuff there as well. But you just can't top what Jeff Hardy has put together as just a whole body of work.
I love Jeff. I think he still has the nod for me too. But I think the older I'm getting and the more he keeps doing it, the more I appreciate Matt and just what he brings to the table. Like, he's just such a smart wrestling mind, right? I think that's more what Matt's going to be.
He did give us a great segment with MVP in 2000, I believe, 9 when they had that basketball match. So,
God. What a
good, you know, I'm not going to.
What a deep cut. Number four coming out is a guy we've covered on the podcast, Farouk Ron Simmons. Yes, and he looks terrifying.
He looks so freaking huge here. Oh my, I was looking at his arms and I'm like, Farouk, do you just lift 24 hours a day? Like, is all that a does. Thing you do?
Just lifting. Now, while these three men are in the ring, I know there's a spot that you love.
Yes. The Hardys do that thing. I always forget what it's called. Where
Whisper in the Wind.
Is it Whisper in the Wind?
Poetry in Motion.
Yeah, Poetry in Motion. That's the one. Because Whisper in the Wind is when Jeff gets on the top rope and does that little
twirly thing. Yeah, and he does the rotation flip thing. Yeah.
Poetry in Motion. That's the one. So yeah, they go for Poetry in Motion. Jeff slips on Matt's back and barely gets Farouk. And when he's doing it, there's this guy in the crowd who's in the Right to Censor outfit. So the white, but loose, very, very loose button up with a black tie. And he stands up and he's like, what's going on here?
You love to see the fans get in on it. It's why another reason I miss the fans at WrestleMania.
Yeah. And that guy,
goofy stuff like that.
That guy has some more stuff that's going to come along that I'm going to talk about, but that's for later on in the podcast.
Hardys do get a twist of fate, Swanton, and then they eliminate Farouk. And in comes number five, Drew Carey. Yes, the guy who hosts The Price is Right now was in the Royal Rumble match. He waits on the outside for a little bit, which is smart, and then he slides in with his glasses still on.
Yeah.
Like a nerd. What are your thoughts on Drew Carey's appearance in the Rumble?
I have no opinions on Drew Carey in the Rumble, to be honest. It's not this part that I really enjoyed. It's what comes after, right before he meets his demise, so to speak. Because he doesn't really do anything, because the Hardy Boys eliminate themselves.
Yes, they eliminate each other by wrestling on the turnbuckle, and I believe Matt pulls Jeff down by his shirt, which is tied around his waist at that point, and that's how he gets Jeff out too. Drew is left in the ring, and in comes number six, the man who carries the whole first 20-ish minutes, 30-ish minutes of the Rumble by himself.
Steve Blackman.
I wish. It's Kane. That's gotta be Kane.
That's gotta be Kane.
It's one of my favorite Rumble entrances of all time, and part of that is Drew Carey's responsibility. He tries to shake Kane's hand, and then he tries to bribe Kane. And he's yelling, Drew Carey's yelling at the Hardy Boys to come back in and help him. He's yelling at the refs to help him. Drew Carey sells how scary Kane is, which, like, Kane's a scary dude. That's reasonable.
My favorite part, actually, was when he's coming down the ramp, and then he just circles the ring. He's stalking Drew Carey. That is awesome. I love that right there. You know, Kane... Kane's obviously, you know, he's a guy who really understood the character. He really knew the finer character work of everything. The guy was just money in that role. And obviously you saw how his career went, you know. So obviously he is one of the greatest of all time for the company. And, you know, this is really prime Kane. This, like, 2000 to, agreed, like, 2002 range where he is super huge, super athletic. He's got all the character stuff down. He's kind of expanding the character a little bit as time goes on. It's awesome. 2001 specifically for me is probably the peak of Kane, because this is where he just has it all going for him, and he's got the great mask, the one that's like tied together where you can see his like beard and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, I love this Kane right here.
Number 7 is Raven, who saves Drew Carey before Drew Carey eliminates himself. So Kane had grabbed Drew Carey for a choke slam. Raven comes out, hits Kane with garbage can lid, something big. And then Drew Carey, recognizing and reading the room effectively, just eliminates himself without a bump. And then he high-fives people on his way out. Because I guess also Drew Carey had a pay-per-view coming up.
Yes, like, I was going to say. Some pay-per-view
special coming up. Yeah.
He has a pay-per-view special coming up. And I was like, wait, Drew Carey did stuff?
Well, Drew Carey's a comedian, right? He should do stand-up. So my guess is probably some sort of stand-up special.
I guess. I don't know. You probably know more about Drew Carey than I do. I just know him as the guy from the current iteration of The Price is Right.
Have you ever seen Whose Line Is It Anyways?
No.
Oh my goodness, a wonderful improv comedy show that would happen, and it was hosted by Drew Carey, had Wayne Brady, a couple other guys as regulars. Man, if you ever want to go down a good YouTube rabbit hole, watch Whose Line Is It Anyways compilations. That was funny stuff.
For those listening, I swear, Evan's not that much older than I am. he's about my brother's age, so he's only 6 years old. I am 28
going on like 57 years old.
He's only 6 years older than me here, but I swear to God, every single time we do a podcast, Evan feels like he's 20 years older than me at least.
I made a reference to a band that I thought that I work with university age students, and I thought that they would know who this was. And I'm going to say the reference, and I need you to tell me if you know who these people are. Do you know who Milli Vanilli is?
Yes.
Okay, good. None of them knew. Not a single soul on my university age staff. No, they're the ones who didn't sing their own song.
Well, yeah, they're that, but they're also the biggest.
They also made them a one hit wonder. You're right. So Royal Rumble match. I told you part of this would be there would be asides, and some of them are about Milli Vanilli, and that's okay. Raven is the one who starts the Hardcore Rumble. We talked about it at the top. This is the Rumble champion that's remembered for being hardcore. Yep, Raven's the hardcore champion. This dude was one of the stars of the division, and this was the prime era of hardcore championship, I would say. Part of it.
Yeah, for sure.
Al Snow comes out early and attacks Raven. Okay. He's number 8, but he jumps the gun and comes out early.
I was meaning to ask you about this. Do you think this was a mistake by chance, or was this like a planned thing? Because it just felt so weird. Because the whole thing was Al Snow had been out for a while because Raven took him out. But like, I get you want the revenge and everything, but I feel like there would have been more of a shock factor had he just come out normally.
Yeah, I think they were going for something a little different. I think it was planned. Especially because commentary makes a point of talking about how Al Snow hasn't been seen in weeks. And they also do a good job retconning it, being like, oh, he must have been number 8. He just got out here early. Couldn't wait to get his hands on Raven. I think it works better for the...
Could have been that as well.
Could have been. But I think it works better for the at-home audience than it does for the in-ring, like the in-arena audience, because they would have popped harder for sure hearing Al Snow's music. But instead, we just get him attacking Raven early, which I think was good. I think worked.
Also, Al Snow, an episode that I cannot wait to do. I'm a big Al Snow guy. I love Al Snow.
Al Snow is a good, I think, ambassador for wrestling.
Yeah, I think
he seems to have a lot of knowledge.
Al Snow to me will always be kind of like a poor man's version of Mick Foley. I just love Al Snow. There's just something about Al Snow that I really love.
Which I think Mick Foley would even say. Have you ever read Mick Foley's books?
I haven't.
It's a lot of ribbing Al Snow. It's pretty great. Number nine is Perry Saturn, who is somebody I always liked. I always loved his style. I always thought he was very entertaining. I liked seeing him wrestle. Somebody big who guy. I think is underappreciated.
Big guy in this Rumble.
Oh, huge.
Yeah, he's probably all of 5'11", maybe 6 feet at best. But like the guy was built.
He was built. He was terrifying. I think it was something about his face. He just had always a scary demeanor. And so yeah. I always, he looked very believable to me as like a tough wrestler.
To me, Perry, I just have no opinion whatsoever on Perry Saturn. He was obviously before my time. And, you know, the only really thing I know about him, aside from the fact that he was in this match, was the stuff with the Radicals and the fact that he had a mop with him at one point. I saw him with Terry here, and I was very concerned.
He had Terry as a manager for about a year or so.
A year? I did not know that.
Yeah. Number 10, so the ring is filling up a little bit right now. Number 10 is Steve Blackman.
The GOAT.
Which pretty much makes the whole hardcore division in the ring at once. Also, are Steve Blackman's little, like, I don't know what to call them, karate
nunchucks?
Sticks? They're not nunchucks, though, are they? Because nunchucks have connecting them. Are they? Okay. Yeah. Are those cool or are they corny in wrestling?
Steve Blackman's nunchucks are amazing. Don't you disrespect the Steve Blackman nunchucks, Evan. I will travel to wherever part of Canada you are. You're 2 hours outside of Toronto, I know that. I will circle the entire 2-hour perimeter to find you. Steve Blackman is an all-timer. He is the greatest professional wrestler to never win a title outside of William Regal, or the world title outside of William Regal. And if I hear you say that Steve Blackman shouldn't have been in the main event of WrestleMania this year against The Rock, I will kill you.
Steve, wow, that went places. That went far. I just think it's funny because sometimes it looks like Steve Blackman is just drumming on people. Because he's trying to hold back a little bit from hitting people so he doesn't totally, you know, sandbag somebody and just whop them. And sometimes it looks like he's just drumming on human beings. And I think that's pretty funny.
I love Steve Blackman so much.
Steve Blackman is apparently the GOAT, and that's something that that's Javier's hill to die on, and that's fine. Number 11 is the coolest guy in wrestling, I think we can all agree, Grandmaster Sexay.
Grandmaster Sexay!
The ring is essentially collecting bodies for Kane to toss out, because up until Roman Reigns, this is the match that had the single Rumble elimination record, and it was Kane who held it before Roman Reigns broke it.
I thought Roman broke it? I thought he tied Kane.
I believe Roman broke it, and then Braun Strowman broke that.
That's not canon.
But we don't count the greatest Royal Rumble because it's in Saudi Arabia.
It's not canon.
It's not canon. It really isn't. How many times has he defended the greatest Royal Rumble championship that he won? Never.
Does Daniel Bryan own the record for the longest time in a Royal Rumble match? Because
according to the WWE hype package for this year's Rumble, he does.
Well, he doesn't. It's still Rey Mysterio.
It's still Rey.
Listen, my favorite part about Grandmaster Sexay coming out here was Jerry the King Lawler's reaction to Grandmaster Sexay coming out here.
To his son coming out.
Because, like, Jerry the King, like, Grandmaster Sexay is a white guy dressed like a person who is just trying really hard to be cool and doing a gimmick that is just really not great. And he's just trying to be a supportive dad. It's like a dad whose kid is a DJ, but he really wanted his kid to be a doctor. So he's like, oh, Grandmaster Sexay! let's go.
It's like when your parents see you playing a video game and they ask if you're winning, and it's like a game that you can't be winning in, and it's kind of like, yeah, because you just appreciate that they took the time to acknowledge that you were doing something. You're just like, thanks for checking in on me. That's good.
Like, have you ever seen the movie The Other Guys?
Yes.
Michael Keaton's character is the commissioner, but he also works at Lowe's. And when he's working at Lowe's, he's like, my kid's a DJ. I gotta support him. And it's just like, okay, this is what we're doing here.
This Rumble episode has been full of deep cuts. I like this. Kane at one point... So the ring has filled up, and Kane just gets pissed and starts eliminating people. He hits Grandmaster Sexay with a garbage can to knock him over the ropes. Love that elimination.
Yeah.
Kane tosses the goat Steve Blackman over the ropes, who skins the cat before getting absolutely bodied with a garbage can lid in the head. That's how he eliminates him. And then Kane eliminates Al Snow, Raven, and Saturn in order to clear the ring. And we have a clear ring for our next entrant. Number 12, the Honky Tonk Man. Had forgotten that this part happened.
I'd forgotten the Drew Carey thing happened. I thought the Drew Carey portion of the Royal Rumble was in 2002. I did not remember 2001 being Drew Carey's Rumble.
I had totally forgotten that this Honky Tonk part happened.
When the
music hit and you see the absolute fit on Honky Tonk Man in his just like Elvis onesie looking suit thing with sparkles and music notes, the comparison and the contrast between Honky Tonk Man and Kane is a fantastic visual.
I just think, like, it's been what, probably 12, 13 years since the guy had held the IC title before really like kind of disappearing.
Yeah,
he looks the exact same. He's still chunky.
He really did. He
fits into the suit perfectly, and he's, you know, he's just got the real good Elvis impression going.
And he sings a song, and in a wonderful moment, Kane absolutely rocks him with his own guitar,
just
right over the head. You hate to see it because of CTE, but also these were different times. We know we review things from the past. That's what this podcast is all about.
We will get to the CTE.
Oh, but Kane eliminates Honky Tonk Man and is alone in the ring again. And now is when we get our next, like, real main event star. Number 13 is The Rock. You love to see The Rock enter the Rumble.
Question. What is your favorite version of The Rock's theme? Is it the newer one where he's kind of got the electric guitar? Is it the kind of the first one where he's like, it starts off, if you smell, do you smell what The Rock is cooking? And then he comes out, he sounds like Johnny Bravo. Is it this version where he's like, if you smell what The Rock is cooking? And then he's coming out. Is it the No Way Out one from Hollywood Rock? What is it?
Oh, I think in terms of theme, I think it's like original People's Champion theme, like the first If You Smell. Like, that one, I think, is the one that I think I most associate with Rock. But in terms of my favorite Rock is Hollywood Rock.
Yeah, that's my favorite, like, theme. I love that that song.
I just think Hollywood Rock, as a persona, is one of the funniest things in wrestling history.
I think it's more than just funny. I think it's just such a good character. It's just such a great heel character.
It's what I hope John Cena turns into in the future when he goes to Hollywood.
When he comes back from the Firefly Funhouse.
Exactly.
We've got The Rock in there with Kane. They have some great exchanges. We've talked about great work punches during the Dustin Rhodes podcast. And the biggest omission from that has to be The Rock. I know it's a lot of like showmanship with his punches because they don't really like register. Like if he actually touches someone with a thing, I'd be shocked. But
he makes it look so good.
It looks so good. And when he does the last punch where he like turns and stares at his hand and then hits him. Oh man, I love that thing. The Rock has one of the best punches in the business.
One of the things I noted for Rock during his entrance is The Rock has some of the most expressive trash talk and facial expressions ever. On his way to the ring, you can't hear what he's saying or really make out what he's saying through lip reading. But you know he is walking in there to whoop some ass. Like, that is his one and only goal. And he is talking smack the whole way down. We know Rock is a great talker, but the way he extends that through his matches is always really good. I think he's excellent at it.
Yeah, and that sort of really leads into the next entrant, which is another Right to Censor man, the Good Father.
Oh, the sleeveless shirt with a tie is a choice. Rock smacks Goodfather so hard he eliminates him.
Yeah.
One of those, like, stare at his hand punches, and he smacks him so hard Goodfather just right back over the ropes.
Yep. I love that elimination. Again, like, this was a stage where The Rock could really do no wrong. Man, I wish I had grown up in this time, because if I had, I could genuinely see myself thinking that The Rock is the greatest professional wrestler of all time. Just because he's definitely, in my opinion, the most entertaining wrestler of all time. But man, the guy could just, he understood every little aspect of wrestling, and he was just a showman to the fullest extent of that word.
Outside of Muhammad Ali, I can't think of another athlete with the level of charisma that The Rock has. Like, I genuinely don't think that another person in sports has this much charisma. It's like Muhammad Ali and then The Rock.
So the 15th entrant of the Royal Rumble was Taz.
In his tough guy outfit of black and orange sweatpants and what looks like a sleeveless mechanic shirt.
Hey, that's just, you know, how much longer was Taz around before he transitioned to commentary? Do you know?
It had to have been like another year or so.
Really?
I think it was not soon after, but like before, I think by the end of 2001.
I don't know anything about Taz's WWE run at all, as far as the wrestling side of it goes. I only know Taz the commentator and the ECW.
Taz had a great debut at the Royal Rumble 2000. He had a great debut.
Awesome. I love that Rumble as well. It's a great one.
That's where he ruined Kurt Angle's undefeated streak by choking him out. It was wonderful.
Yes, that is also where Taka Michinoku got destroyed.
Yeah, they weren't even official entrants, and Taka and Funaki just kept jumping in the ring, getting eliminated, and Taka absolutely smashes his face off the outside. A great Rumble moment. Taz lasts a good couple seconds before getting eliminated by Kane, who had sat him on the turnbuckle and then just throat punch, and Taz is gone.
You say a couple of seconds. It was literally 10 seconds he was in the match.
He had a quick sip of coffee, and then he was out. With Taz being our 15th entrant, we've reached the halfway point of the Rumble. So with that, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we get back, the second half of the 2001 Royal Rumble. All right, back and looking at number 16, and it's the second half of the APA. We had Farouk earlier, Bradshaw now. The only guys left in the ring to keep track are Bradshaw now, Kane, and The Rock. Three world champions. Think about that.
Three hosses.
Two real hosses and The Rock pre-hoss. This is Rock before he became a gigantic human being.
The Rock is like 6'5 and uber muscular. Let's not say that he's not a hoss. He's a hoss.
I just think in comparison to Bradshaw and Kane, he looks a little smaller.
I mean, if they're like, you know, Pumbaa, The Rock is at least Porky Pig here. Like, you know, he's a hoss.
I want to know this scale you've developed that is of cartoon pigs. I think this is, where is Peppa? Where does she fall on this scale?
Peppa's the first notch. Peppa's like a, maybe like a Seth Rollins type of a guy.
Oh my God. The idea that Peppa Pig and Seth Rollins are the same is my favorite thing to come out of this podcast. Bradshaw has a good little bit of shine when he gets in the ring and hits a huge clothesline from hell on The Rock.
Huge.
It sounds nasty.
This was my favorite iteration of, you know, John Bradshaw Layfield's, you know, persona, because this 2001 stage was when he really started getting in there. He was a part of the hardcore title scene. You know, and he was just laying in on guys with the clothesline from hell, and I was a big fan of that move. Obviously, he later on becomes a wrestler that I do not enjoy very much when he had his whole thing going with John Cena, but that is for another podcast on another day.
I'm excited for the Bradshaw episode when we do it, because I really appreciate now the JBL character. I hated JBL as a kid. I thought he was the worst, but now I can kind of see and go like, oh, you did exactly what you needed to do.
Yeah. And you pissed me off by getting in the bad graces of John Cena. But that is beside the point. We've got the next entrant here, number 17.
Another Haas.
Albert.
Albert is a glue guy. If there ever is a definition like utility player in WWF, it's Albert.
Tensai.
The man whose real name is Matt Bloom, who's still a trainer, head trainer in NXT, head trainer. I believe. He's been around forever. He does everything, right? From being paired with Draws, to being paired with Test, to being paired with, was he with Brodus Clay? Yeah.
Who's a big show. To being
Lord Tensai with Big Show. Like, he
can
do...
One of the Undertaker matches at WrestleMania. Big Show and Albert against the Undertaker.
Because Undertaker was supposed to be partnered with Nathan Jones, and then they realized he was not ready.
He was more than not ready, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. So Albert comes in, guy can do lots of things. Number 18, another tough guy, Hardcore Holly. Really missed his mark in the match because the hardcore portion of the Rumble is over. It was only really that run of the guys at the beginning. Hardcore Holly comes in. There's a really close call on elimination right around here, and that's where Kane is thrown over the ropes by Rock, and the crowd got super hyped because they thought Kane was gone. But Kane lasts just a bit longer in this match.
Just a little bit, I would say. Yeah, but no, this is a really cool portion of it, because I always like it when there's a mix of top guys and like just like glue guys, but guys who you can sort of get behind for little spurts in matches like these. Like when I see Hardcore Holly come on, I'm like, yes, Hardcore Holly. I know I'm going to get like a solid 10 seconds of entertainment because I like Hardcore Holly in little spurts, you know? Again, Bradshaw is another one of those guys. I like Bradshaw in little spurts. When he's hitting the clothesline, when he's laying in on guys, he's awesome. But when he's JBO and he's talking, get off my TV. But and the same thing with Albert. I mean, Albert was weird because JR called him something like a young guy or like a young prospect or something like that. And it's like Albert's been here for 2 years now. Like, we know Albert. We don't need you to try to build Albert up.
It's not new yet, yeah. Number 19, somebody who is a young guy. It's Kay Quick, a.k.a. R-Truth. He's getting rowdy. That is a great theme. Kay Quick and Road Dogg, one of the OG great rap themes in WWF/E. This is the point where I recognized how much of a back-weighted rumble it was. Because I thought by now that some more of the stars who were promised would be in the match. But it really, up until this point, had been Kane and Rock carrying the whole thing.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of Rock in this Rumble.
Yes.
You know, especially at this point, from basically the moment the guy came in to, you know, the end stages of the match, the Rock really is kind of like the buoy of it all. More so than Kane, I would say. I thought The Rock was the MVP of this Rumble, even though he came in at 13. Just because he did a lot of, you know, he had a lot of good interactions. You mentioned the clothesline from Hell from Bradshaw. He really led a lot of these younger guys and, you know, guys who, again, are just utility players, got a lot of heat on him, which was really good to building them up because, you know, The Rock is obviously a top guy. He's in the main event of WrestleMania this year. Spoiler alert. You know, he goes in as champion. Spoiler alert. I really enjoyed this stage of the Rumble because it's a lot of guys who, again, are glue guys, but are guys that I can care about in little spurts, like I mentioned earlier. So there's just a lot of entertainment value for everyone that really comes in.
Next couple guys. Number 20, Val Venus in his Right to Censor gimmick, which makes this Rumble officially 10% Right to Censor, which is a lot. Number 21 is William Regal, European champion at the time.
Yes.
And a wrestler that I only now fully appreciate because you see how good he was now. And he's wonderful as NXT general manager.
I went back I believe it was like 2, maybe 3 weeks ago or somewhere around that lines. And I watched a lot of William Regal promos for some reason. Like, not William Regal matches proper, just promos. He's very good on the microphone. William Regal is an episode funny. That I'm looking forward to for sure. Because, like, the promos for that are going to be awesome. He has one of Triple H that is especially very good.
Is it in his later run, post-King of the Ring?
No, it's in the... I think he's the Raw general manager. It's when Triple H had that little mini feud with Eugene.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's during that stage. It's just a really good promo. It's definitely the promo that we're picking for the episode when we do it at some point. I'm going to tell you that right now. But
I'm in.
Yeah, right after Regal was Test, who we've mentioned this.
Tosses Regal over like nothing.
Yeah, this is what I was mentioning with that one guy with the right to censor outfit in the audience. He pulls out a sign, England is this way, and then has an arrow pointing in the way that he wants it to go, and he pulls it out as soon as Regal gets eliminated. That guy,
I love that.
Not a William Regal fan.
Not clearly not. Test, great look. I still think looks like $1 million.
Yeah, we talked
really
about
held
this.
Back by being named Test.
We talked about this on a previous podcast. Test is a guy we don't understand why he didn't get pushed harder. He really is awesome.
Number 23, and this is one of the big returns. It's The Big Show. He had been in OVW for a while to lose weight and improve his stamina, and he comes in. And I thought he was going to come in with a little bit more fire, but he really doesn't. It's a pretty slow-moving ring clearing, but he does do a lot of work in the ring. Eliminates
I mean, the
Test with a big.
He comes in like a
house
of
fire. Eliminates Test with a big clothesline. He eliminates Kate Quick, but the rest of it moves pretty slowly.
I mean, to be fair, but like he hits everybody there with a choke slam.
Yes, I wrote down choke slam party. He hits them to Bradshaw, then Albert, then Val Venus, then Hardcore Holly, and he hits Kane. And he goes to hit Rock with a choke slam and gets low blowed because the Rock is not above that.
Yes, The Rock is one of those characters that could get away with that kind of stuff just because it's already built into the character. It's built into the character. The guy was the corporate champion. He's untouchable as a babyface.
This is true. Rock Lobo's Big Show clotheslines him and eliminates him. So Big Show really only comes in for like a big shine moment and that's it.
Yeah, and it's also a nod back to the 2000 Royal Rumble where there was that controversy at the end because The Rock was clearly eliminated before the Big Show, but that wasn't the result that WWE wanted, so Big Show was actually the one that was eliminated first. And it was just like kind of like a cool little callback to that because, you know, The Rock did it clean, but Big Show was not very happy about that, so he takes apart the announcer ring, which is also the first time that I've seen the regular commentary table taken apart before the Spanish commentary table.
You love to see it.
Yeah, they take apart the good old American one that has JR and Jerry Lawler on there, and he pulls out The Rock, beats him a bit, gives him a choke slam right through the table. Rock is down and out for a while.
24, Lil Elroy Jetson comes in, Crash Holly, and you know he doesn't last long because number 25, Undertaker. Coming out to Roland.
Keep rolling.
It is yard clearing time. One of the big storylines going in was if The Undertaker and Kane were going to work together. So this was the big test to see if they were actually going to work together. And the answer is a resounding yes.
Oh, yeah.
Undertaker eliminates Bradshaw, Hardcore Holly, and Val Venus. Kane eliminates Crash Holly and Albert. And it's just down to Kane and Undertaker.
So this right here is probably my favorite portion of commentary that Jerry the King Lawler has ever done, because as everything is happening here with Elroy Jetson, with the Undertaker coming out, Lawler, who's just standing there with JR basically at this point because Rock is just laid out right in front of them, he just keeps going, "Hey Rock, do you see what's going on here? Hey Rock, there's Crash Holly. Oh, it's the Undertaker, Rock. You don't want to go back in there." It's so awesome. He keeps calling to The Rock until, you know, everything happens. And you mentioned, you know, they clear out the ring together. And then Scotty Too Hotty comes out at 26.
Oh, poor Scotty.
He comes out And both The Undertaker and Kane are the only two people in the ring at this point. They've completely wiped it out. They're not even attempting to fight each other. They're nope. standing there side by side, ready for whoever's coming out. It's Scotty Too Hotty who is terrified. You can see it in his face. He's slowly taking off his jacket, slowly takes off everything he needs to take off. He barely slides into the ring before he is just mauled by
double
these two
choke
guys.
Slam to Scotty, the poor fella, and they dispatch of him quickly, which I'm glad they made it, you know, quick and probably not painless, but quick, because you don't need to toy with Scotty like that.
And this is another part where Lawler's just like, hey, Rock, you really don't want to get back in there after that one.
And then Rock probably really didn't want to come in next, because number 27, this is when business, it picks up, as they say.
The glass shatters. 27,
the glass shatters. It's Stone Cold Steve Austin. What a group of four, right? You always talk about Final Fours, but what a group of four to be in the Rumble right now. Rock, Austin, Undertaker, Kane. It's like everything you need out of the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
But before Austin can get to the ring, Triple H attacks him from behind. Another part that I had totally forgotten about in this Rumble.
See, I didn't forget about that just because I didn't skip directly to the Rumble. I was like skipping through in the WWE Network app on my phone. And, you know, I thought I got to a part where the Rumble was. I didn't. It was the main event. Air quotes main event, the WWF title match, which was Triple H against Kurt Angle. And I saw it was right at the finish, which is when Stone Cold Steve Austin comes down to interfere to give Kurt Angle the win. And screws Triple H, obviously, out of the title. So I knew from there, I was like, yeah, this is the one where Stone Cold gets attacked by Triple H.
And attack he does. The interference makes Austin bloody. He beats him all the way back up the ramp. And then Triple H gets held back by like seven referees. Like,
it's a lot.
It's a little overkill, but like Triple H is trying to, you know, murder Austin really at this point.
To be fair, Triple H is towering over every single one of the referees there.
That's true. They are very tiny referees. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I think Charles Robinson was one of them. Charles Robinson's all of like 5'7", 5'8". The guy's not tall.
My fellow Canadian Jimmy Corderas was there, I believe.
Oh, one of my favorite Jimmy fans. The guy, he was one of the SmackDown referees during the heyday of my SmackDown watching. So Jimmy Corderas will always be one of my favorite referees ever.
There's a national broadcast sports network called The Score, and that's where Renee Young got her start in terms of like national TV audience covering wrestling. And she had a show where she talked wrestling with Jimmy Corderas.
So what I'm hearing here is Canada. Cool. So 28, Billy Gunn comes out.
But not regular ass man Billy Gunn. You're right. It's the one Billy Gunn, which this gimmick never worked.
I don't even know what the gimmick is. I really don't.
They try every once in a while to push Billy Gunn as a single star, and it just never connects. He either won the King of the Ring before this, I believe, or after. He won the King of the Ring.
I think 2000.
Yeah. And he immediately gets buried by The Rock in an iconic promo.
Yep.
And it just doesn't work. Billy Gunn is like close to the size of Undertaker and Kane when he gets in the ring.
He's like 6'6".
That surprised me.
He's a big dude.
He's a big dude. And you can understand why WWF always wants to push him, because he looks great.
I'm gonna go back. So there was a stage where Billy Gunn legitimately could have been one of those top guys. The problem is, it was in the stage of the New Age Outlaws where they were still together. There wasn't any rift between them, but they were sort of doing their own solo thing. And for some ungodly reason, WWF decided the good idea was to give the IC title to Road Dogg and the Hardcore title to Billy Gunn, when it should have been the other way around. And I still believe that if Billy Gunn had gotten the IC title at that point, that could have been a launching pad for him to eventually get to a main event at some point.
I think he's just missing that charisma piece. Like, the guy that had it factor. I say I don't he had think it. He did. His promos never did anything for me. Name an iconic Billy Gunn promo that doesn't just say, if you're not down with that, we got two words for you. Like, it does not exist.
Iconic Billy Gunn promo when he got buried by The Rock. Dear God, my name's Billy.
Yeah, exactly. It was him getting buried. Let's move on to a wonderful surprise entrant.
One I forgot about.
No reaction. No real reaction from the fans.
As it should be, because you don't want to react to this guy.
Haku.
Yes. Meng.
It's his first return to WWF since 1992.
Winning the 1992 Royal Rumble. Talk about a callback.
Exactly. What a good callback. Thanks, Haku. After this, he formed a team with Rikishi as a heel, like a big imposing heel tag team, but Rikishi would get injured, which kind of derailed the team, and I believe Haku would be released within the year or a little over a year.
That team could have been so awesome together. I agree. I never knew that. That is awesome. Yeah. That sounds really good.
It really does. It sounds like a big scary version of the Usos.
That's perspective. But yeah, no, the
obviously not with like a lot of the Uso gimmick, but just like, you know, Rikishi's Uso's dad. Maybe he'd have some similar flavor to his tag style.
I would say it's more like the Gorillas of Destiny over in New Japan with Tama Tonga and Tama Loa. I'd say it's more that than the Usos.
But, though I'd love to see Haku and Rikishi do stereo splashes. I think that'd be great.
Let me tell you, I don't see the scary part about it is it's not Rikishi doing the splash that I don't see. It's Haku doing the splash that I don't see.
I think
see.
You're right. Speaking of Rikishi, number 30 is Rikishi. I don't understand this, and I want to pose this to you. When Rikishi turned heel, why did his gear not change even the slightest? He looks like
are
the
you,
guy
are
we
you
usually
gonna
saw.
Tell him to change out of a thong?
No, I'm not gonna, you know, if he wants to wear a thong, he can wear a thong. Like, that's this whole business. But it's such a weird duality to be like, hey, remember that guy who danced with Too Cool and would put on the shades and like did the butt stuff? Now he's scary. Like, make him look different, is all I'm saying. Because I see him and I'm like, how is this any different than regular Rikishi? Like, I just don't see the real change, right? I love when if you make character change something about the appearance, right? Change it up a little bit. Nothing is different here.
Yeah, I thought it was cool because he comes in here and doesn't he like immediately get peed up by Austin?
Yeah, Austin doesn't forget the fact that this man ran him over with a car and brawls with him on the outside, which I really liked.
Yeah, and again, it was like almost immediate. So Austin was like slowly getting his way back to the ring.
And I think he's getting his wits about him.
Yeah, he was just kind of like on the barricade, sort of like leaning there when Rikishi comes out. And Rikishi like takes his shades off, takes off whatever he needs to take off from his gear. And he just turns, sees Austin, and like tries to interact with him. Austin like doesn't even hesitate. The second Rikishi puts a hand on him, he just starts wailing him with punches.
Just whoops him. And I love it.
And he throws him in the ring. Austin crawls in, and we're off to the races, folks.
We've got all of our remaining guys, so there's no more entrants. We've got 30.
Yeah.
Next couple eliminations. Austin eliminates Haku, which did not get a reaction really at all.
People just weren't into Haku here, and I don't understand why. It's like at that point, you don't react when he comes out. Because you don't know what he wants from you. And I am convinced that if all however many thousands of people were in there in attendance go against Haku, Haku wins that fight. Haku wins that fight easily.
Haku versus the entire city of New Orleans. Haku wins that fight.
Yes. But when he gets eliminated, that's when you're just like, oh no, no more Haku. No.
Yeah. Rikishi eliminates The Undertaker by the old like wrestling stereotype of Samoans having stronger heads, because Undertaker goes to headbutt him twice and
didn't work,
and so Rikishi headbutts him and then super kicks him, and Undertaker gets eliminated, which love this elimination.
It is not the super kick, it is the
right
thrust
it was a thrust kick.
I
am so sorry. I still don't love this elimination. I think it was kind of a weak way to eliminate The Undertaker, who had been so dominant up to that point.
I think it made a lot of sense. In hindsight, it doesn't. But in the moment, I think it does, just because you're trying to build up Rikishi as a top heel. And, you know, seeing what happens with The Undertaker going into Mania, where it's him against Triple H, it sort of really, you don't need a lot of heat for The Undertaker at this point, because most of the heat's going to come from the Triple H side of things in that feud. So why not? Of all the people left in this ring, the one that I would have wanted to see eliminated by Rikishi, it would have been The Undertaker, just because he's the one that could have afforded it the most at this point.
Fair. Rock eliminates Rikishi. Rikishi goes for a bonsai drop, gets low blowed, and then Rock just tosses him off the turnbuckle. I thought that was a good way to do it.
Low blowed. Wow.
Yeah, it connects.
Yeah, that did not look like it was worked at all. That looked like a real one.
There are certain pieces in wrestling that I look at, I'm like, I don't know how you do that without it hurting in some way. And like, that's one spot that I'm like, there's no way that Rikishi was not in legitimate pain there.
See, I thought that about the Otis Dolph Ziggler match, when Dolph kicks him super freaking hard and as a low blow, and it looked like in real time, like, wow, that connected. That sucked.
Especially with no crowd, you could really hear how it connected.
Yeah, but then they showed the replay of it in slow motion, and you could just see that Dolph kicked him in the thigh. It wasn't actually his crotch area.
Good on you, Dolph. So we're down to a final four of Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, Kane, and the one Billy Gunn.
Honestly, he didn't really stick out like a sore thumb to me here. I liked the performance by Billy Gunn in this Rumble. I was a big fan of it.
I think it's fine. I think he...
You're just not a Billy Gunn history, guy, and that's okay.
In the annals of history, it sticks out like a sore thumb to see Kane, Austin, Rock, and Gunn.
He has a really good showing here. You know, he does some business there with Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Right, he flips off Stone Cold at one point, which, like, that's a bold strategy, sir.
Yeah, hits him with a Famouser.
Yes, he does.
It's a great little interaction those two guys had.
I do like the Famouser a lot. I will give Billy Gunn that. I'm a big Famouser guy. I think it's a great move.
It's unfortunately... So I will always hate... Well, I will always be more into like finishers that you could hit out of nowhere. Like, I like a good cutter. I like the code breaker, you know, obviously the stunner, you know, moves like that. Seth Rollins stomp, you can kind of hit out of nowhere, really. Yeah. You know, stuff like that. But, like, I don't know. Like, Cena's FU is one of those things you can kind of hit out of nowhere, because all he really has to do is get a guy up and just throw him. Same thing with the F5. But, like, moves like the Famouser, the pile drivers, you know, moves that kind of need some setup. Those just kind of don't work for me as well as the other stuff. So the Famouser kind of falls into that category where it's like, eh.
But of those types of moves, I think it's a really good creative move.
Yeah. It's fun. I mean, it's one that I've never seen outside of Billy Gunn, to be honest. Outside of the new
generation.
I was really
glad when Dolph Ziggler kind of adopted it for a while, because Ziggler would hit it. And I thought that comparison worked for me. Of Ziggler taking a Billy Gunn move, that seemed to fit.
Yes, two mid-card guys who never really were main eventers.
Wonderful blondes. Austin tosses Billy Gunn out to get to our final three. And that's when we get the iconic Austin Rock stare down.
Yeah, so the Rock did some business there on Kane. Kane was down in the corner. And then Austin, after eliminating Billy Gunn, you know, he just turns, locks eyes with the Rock, and that's like a solid 20 seconds.
And they both pull themselves up in the corner, which is such a good visual.
I love that.
And then anytime Austin and Rock start trading strikes, it's wonderful. It's always so good.
Yeah, but it leads to Stone Cold hitting the Rock with a stunner. And another one of those iconic Rock sells of the stunner here, where he just oversells it so hard. I love No one takes a stunner better. No one takes a stunner better. The only thing that even slightly compares is
Scott Hall.
Scott Hall takes it at WrestleMania.
Where
18,
he just bounces backwards.
Where he just bounces backwards, but it's like as good height. He doesn't move at all. He's like stiff while he does it. I love that. But The Rock is just unmatched here. I mean, this is easily, to me at least, one of his better sells of it too, because it doesn't look over the top, but it's still over the top. It's just so good.
Speaking of over the top, Austin gets hit with the Rock Bottom. Kane gets tossed between the ropes by Rock, not over.
Which was awesome, because if you look closely, he's going to throw him over the top rope, but Kane switches the direction. He just moves his body down so that when Rock kinda puts the power on it, he gets to go through the middle rope. That was a smart play by Kane. People don't give Kane credit for being smart.
Give Kane credit. Rock goes to eliminate Austin. Kane comes in from behind. Tries to dump them both out. Rock hits the ground. So Rock's out, but Austin survives. Overall, a great performance from The Rock in this Rumble.
Yeah. Again, Rock was my MVP for this Royal Rumble. He was so good in this.
My MVP is Kane, only because I think in the early stages, he was the only one, like the only genuine main event star holding the whole Rumble
Steve
together.
Steve Blackman had some words. Steve Blackman has
I really
words.
Think that it was mainly Kane and his interactions that carried it from the sixth spot all the way to, you know, Rock comes in at 13, but even then, they don't get another really big star for a while.
Man, it's just Undertaker.
The next big guy, it was Big Show at 23. So from 6 to 23, only having the Rock's help, I think Kane's my MVP. Shall we do the finish? The big finale?
Kane goes down there, grabs a chair, brings a chair in. Somehow, some ways, I forget how it was, Stone Cold ends up with the chair. And talk about CTE.
Oh, multiple chair shots to the head. The way that Austin gets the chair, if I remember correctly, is Austin hits a low blow, because he's allowed to do those too. A low blow that Jim Ross calls an XFL-like punt below the belt line, which like, hey, XFL's back, that's awesome.
He hate me.
Yeah, he gets the chair and then just connects on some just mean chair shots.
Yeah, and these are unprotected chair shots, by the way, everyone listening to this. It is
very unprotected.
Vicious. These are like Stone Cold did not pull back on those, really. He was going in there with those chair shots. It looked ugly. Again, if any wrestler is somehow listening to this, please just don't do unprotected chair shots. Just it's not worth it. It really isn't.
I love the idea of like a wrestler being like, you know, I was going to do a spot where I got an unprotected chair shot, but those two guys on the internet, they said I shouldn't do it, so I'm not going to do it, Mr. Booker Man.
Let's see, who's the most likely wrestler to be watching? Sammy Guevara, if you're listening to this, please don't let Cody hit you. Don't let Darby Allin, don't let him hit you with an unprotected chair shot. Just don't do it. Not worth it, man. You're young. You've got a good future ahead of you. Don't let it happen.
You've got a good head in your shoulders. Keep it there.
Yeah.
So with the chair shots, Austin then eliminates Kane. Austin goes to WrestleMania in one of the most memorable WrestleMania moments, I'd say.
Yeah. I'm not going to play contrarian here because it's a belief I genuinely had. I thought it was a good heel turn. I thought the heel turn, obviously it didn't do well because the people love Stone Cold Steve Austin, the character, all that. But I thought it was a flawlessly executed heel turn. They put the seeds in for months in advance. Before this Rumble even started, Vince McMahon was like, Stone Cold Steve Austin is obsessed with being the WWF champion. You've got the stare off with The Rock here in the Rumble that like really plants the seeds in, because it's like, you, you're the guy. I want you. It's like, I was going to go straight into my Nate Diaz calling out Conor McGregor, but I don't want to drop F-bombs on this podcast, so that's not going to happen. But yeah, it's like they just planted so many seeds here, and it makes a lot of sense that he did what he did at WrestleMania because he was just so obsessed with winning the title.
I think it's a good heel turn. I think you're right. The people didn't want to see it. I think it does mark the end of the Attitude Era. Like, that officially to me is the end of the Attitude Era. is when Stone Cold turns heel. That makes a lot of
sense, too. WCW, it really starts getting put into WWF after Mania here. Yep. And, you know, it's just really downhill and into the downhill for a while before the Ruthless Aggression era really starts in 2002. Agreed.
I think the Austin Rock match is one of my favorite matches of all time. I think their entire trilogy really is. I have a weird soft spot for 15. I think it was one of my first WrestleManias I ever watched. It was the first WrestleMania I ever watched. And so when I saw that match, I thought it was great. But 17 is the one with the My Way promo, right?
Yes. The best
wrestling
video package.
The best wrestling hype video of all time.
Not 100%. Even close to me. Not even close. The only thing that comes close to me is the Daniel Bryan WrestleMania 30.
Monster. Yep. Yeah. Glad we're in agreeance. Yes. That wraps up this Royal Rumble. We talked about our MVPs. We talked about yours being Rock, mine being Kane. Were there any people who you think stood out in a surprising way, a surprise performer to you that isn't Steve Blackman?
Oh, you stole it from me. I'm going to say, like, I liked the Billy Gunn was only in here for 7 minutes and 22 seconds. And I thought it was a good shift by the guy. Obviously they're trying to push him to the stratosphere by this stage, but I really liked the performance he gave here. He gave some good character stuff. That interaction with Stone Cold right before he gets dumped out was very good. Obviously, you know, the one Billy Gunn doesn't really work for me as a gimmick. I don't even know what the gimmick is. But like, I liked him here.
Just the one.
I thought it was good. I thought that Bradshaw, who was in there for 17 minutes and 40 seconds, I thought he had a good shift as well. Yep. You know, a lot of it was kind of just him being a guy in the match, but he had these short little bursts where he was really, really fun. And there was a lot of little entertaining snippets. I mean, the Drew Carey stuff was fun. The stuff with Honky Tonk Man was fun. You know, William Regal comes in there and he's like a showman for the first 30 seconds of it all. And then he gets dumped out by Test like a minute later. So, yeah, you know, there was some good stuff, some good character work. All in all, I thought it was a really good Rumble. You know, the thing we mentioned about the 92 Rumble that was so great in it was that it was split up into like three different stages, kind of. Yeah. And each stage had its own little, you know, element of guys being MVPs. Like, the first stage of this is kind of like the hardcore side. Then you've got, you know, the middle bit there where it's, you know, you've got your anchors and Kane and The Rock, but you've got a lot of good glue guys out there. And then obviously the last bit of this is just your main event players, you know, your Undertakers, your Rocks, your Kanes, Stone Colds, all that stuff. And that's what really leads to the finish here. And, you know, if you can have a Rumble that's separated into those three parts with those three key things, kind of, or like three elements that make it good, I think that's when you've got a Rumble that's really iconic and that really works. And this one has all that.
As you can see in a lot of Iron Man matches, it's hard to keep people's attention for an hour without switching it up in some way, right? There need to be acts almost in the Iron Man match, and a Rumble is usually at least an hour long, if not a little longer.
Yeah.
So there always needs to be those different spurts, right? You need to have your comedy bits, like your Honky Tonk Man, your Drew Carey. This one added the hardcore element. I think Raven did really well in this Rumble at just like introducing all the hardcore stuff, keeping it all together, and then they all quickly got eliminated. I thought that was a good little bit.
All of them teaming up on Kane too at that one part before who's it? The Rock comes out, I believe. Or no, before Honky Tonk Man comes out. Like that was
pretty cool. Yes, they all get eliminated before Honky Tonk comes out, yeah. But, you know, I think they do a really good job, as you mentioned, segmenting this Rumble and making it so it's different all the way through. And on a rewatch, I think the part that really got me is when you see that Stone Cold Rock stare down that gets played a lot in terms of hype videos in their careers, it still got me real pumped up. I was ready.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where, like, I kind of want to go back and watch WrestleMania 17 now.
I considered it. I was thinking about it. I was like, do I have time to just, like, go watch just that match? And I think I do. I think I am going to go back and watch it.
Yeah, my thing is, I just, before I watch that match, I just have to watch the Three Stages of Hell match between Stone Cold and Triple H. Because, again, like, that is genuinely one of the greatest wrestling matches I've ever seen. I love that match. I think it's better than the McFoley matches that Triple H had the year before. You know, I think the Three Stages of Hell match is better than the one he had with Shawn Michaels at SummerSlam, I believe it was.
SummerSlam 02?
Yeah, I believe it's that. But yeah, no, this I love that Stone Cold Triple H match. It genuinely is iconic. It has a great finish that leads to stuff that they were kind of working towards for stuff post-Mania. But it really works as a storyline heading into WrestleMania, because you're just like, okay, so how's Triple H going to play a role in all this? Because he comes out as the winner in that match, but Stone Cold's going to the main event. So what's going to happen there? So it just brings a lot more to the story and a lot more of, you know, okay, so Stone Cold turns heel. How does Triple H play in all of this? And, you know, it's just really cool. And, man, 2001 had so much good storytelling. I really love that year.
Like, we should just have a pod of you just breaking down the Three Stages of Hell, maybe. And I'll just sit here and go, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is an excellent match. I'm not selling that short. It's an excellent match. It's real good.
Yeah. I personally prefer
the Cactus Jack Triple H stuff, specifically the Street Fight at Rumble 2000.
I meant more the Three Stages of Hell that they had at No Way Out. Or is it No Way Out?
It's a Hell in a Cell they have at No Way Out.
Is it a Hell in a Cell? I thought it was. Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, that I thought it was Three Stages of Hell. That's my mistake. But yeah, no, you know, I thought it was better than that match. The
so
street
many
fight.
more viewing recommendations for the people now.
Yeah, the street
don't
fight.
Don't just go
is
watch the Rumble. Go watch excellent. Three Stages of Hell. Go watch Cactus Jack versus Triple H.
Go watch all of this stuff, man. Wrestling is so fun at this time.
And what else is on TV right now?
Yeah, there's nothing. Yeah.
We got no sports to
unless
watch.
Unless you
want to
watch marble races
stuff
on Facebook Live, like, this is pretty much all you've got going for you here. You know, just watch. Go watch some good old-fashioned wrestling. And again, Sammy Guevara, don't take chair shots to the head unprotected. Don't do it.
With that, we're going to wrap up this bonus episode. Our next episode, after this bonus episode, really excited. It's the first part of our three-part series on The Undertaker.
Yes.
We're going to dive into 90s Undertaker, and then we're going to be following that up with 2000s and 2010s Undertaker. I'm really excited for our first multi-part episode. Undertaker is, of course, the probably most deserving person of a multiple-part episode, because there's so much of The Undertaker to get through, so, and we're still not going to be able to cover everything.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited for this. When I broached the idea by you to sort of split Undertaker up into a multi-part thing, I was really excited for it, just because, you know, The Undertaker kind of had to be the first guy to do it, because he is sort of like the death.
He's the standard bearer of longevity, I'd say.
Yeah, he's also like the standard bearer of, you know, just like he's the flag bearer of the WWE. Like, when you think
he's
of WWE, you mostly think of guys like Austin and Hulk Hogan and stuff like that. But like, The Undertaker was there for all of it, man. Like, there was just
the
so much of
company
it.
Man.
No one really defines the WWE like The Undertaker does. And I'm really excited to do this because, you know, we don't know how much longer is left. There's a special that's going to come out soon. You know, The Last Ride. That's sort of, kind of, but not really hinting towards a potential retirement for a good old Mark Calloway.
And honestly, if this Boneyard match was his last match, good. What a wonderful way to ride out into the sunset.
I'm really hoping that it's at Survivor Series this year, because it's the 30-year anniversary of his debut. So I think that would be a really, really good way of doing so. Feed him to Aleister Black and let it happen.
I think that's a great idea. With that, where can the people find you on social media, Javier?
The good old Twitter machine. I am at JMello Sports. That is JMello Sports. I'm going to say this every single time I say it.
Watch his slow descent into madness. It's
you can
a great
watch
time.
My slow descent into madness. You can listen and look out for all my sports journalism endeavors, which right now are very few and far between because there are no sports to report on. I'm a young journalist. I'm 22 years old. I'm about to graduate from college, so there will be a lot of sports being talked about in the next coming months when everything starts to open up and I can get a job.
Once we get sports once again.
But I would love to talk about wrestling with stuff. I do interact on there. If you guys ever want to reach out to me and, you know, talk about anything, I would be happy to engage with you guys. Sammy Guevara, if you want to slide into my DMs and ask how you can take a protected chair shot to the head. I would gladly advise you not to reach out to me about that. Talk to literally anyone on the roster except for Cody, because Cody didn't learn that lesson either.
Yeah, that's a good point. You can follow me at It's Evan Gomes, ItsEvanGomes on Twitter. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Crossbody of Work. You can also email the podcast at crossbodyofworkpod@gmail.com. If you have ideas for people we should cover, if you have ideas for bonus episodes, because we're going to be trying to go 2 episodes a week as best we can to kind of fill the void. We know lots of people don't have things to keep them busy and to entertain them during this trying time. And so if you get entertained by these two idiots talking about wrestling, we'd be glad to help.
Yeah.
It's the small bit we can do to assist in these trying times. But
we're doing our part.
That'll wrap up this episode. Yeah, you're right. We're doing our part. But that'll wrap up this episode. It was really fun to review the 2001 Rumble. Had a good time. Any wise words? Wise parting words for the people, Javier?
Steve Blackman's main eventer.
And on that note, we will see you all next week. Bye, guys.
See you guys.